looks like we're just about ready to go. Lights out here in Spain. Good start that from Fabio Quartararo and Morbidelli as well.
There's
Quartararo
Miller.
Gets swallowed. It's gone wrong. Miller is going to take the lead from Pecco Bagnaia.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 659. I'm one of your hosts, Skyler Vicoria, and joining me as ever is Jim McDowell. Jim, how's it going?
That's pretty good. It has definitely not spring here in Ohio. It's gotten cold again and rainy, and I'm not happy about that. But we have MotoGP to talk about, so that's cool.
Yeah, it's a, you know, it could rub your nose in it. It's like 90 degrees here today, so we skipped spring and we went straight to summer. Yeah, I wish it was a little cooler. Not snowing cold, but yeah, I could deal with a little cooler. So we're not, because we're going to be on fire for the next 5 months now. So, you know, look forward to that as well. Oh, man. So a little late this week, or I guess week and a half, getting the show out. Last week was hectic. Jim and I had plans to get everything going. Then Jim had to go do some work. He's at a hotel. And I was like, okay, let's not do that. Moved to the next day, and then I forgot that I had gotten my second shot for COVID that day. It kicked my butt for about a day and a half or so, and then I was good, and then weekend hit, and it was Mother's Day weekend, and that was nuts. So here we are, a little bit late, but still, plenty to talk about MotoGP and the news and everything else.
I agree. It's like, there's some good stuff I have in this weekend, some good news, so there's, you know, but we can get some good news in for everybody.
There we go. Perfect. All right. So we do have some listener feedback for this week's show. It's kind of a continuation of what we've been going here over with the last few weeks. But Garrigans writes in again. And he goes, hi, guys. Well, time to tell if I'm right about being able to learn to be a champion in MotoGP, or if the riders need to bring the skill set from lower classes. And yes, I am aware of Christensen, McNish et al. Continue to win with the Audi Coupe. And that was when they were making the comparison there that Jim had brought up. But my point was that they were forced to adapt and were good enough to adapt. Audi wasn't going to go back to an open cockpit for them. Now, with another weekend without a race, where is Superbike when we need them? Isn't that true?
That's very true. Like, yeah, like I don't understand that one, but keep going. We'll rant about that later.
Oh God. And then the break in there. Oh yeah. We'll rant about it. Here's another belief of mine that everyone can yell at me about. There are champions and multiple champions. To be a multiple champion, you need to be ruthless. Look at Rossi and Marquez. They know how to smile on camera, but on the track, it's get out of the way. I'm the champ and I have the right to come through to the front. The same was an F1 with Rosberg, both senior and junior, nice guys, one-time champs. Schumacher, Senna, Hamilton, etc. were all 100% bastards on track. Sterling Moss, nice guy, never champ. The only exception that I can think of is Jackie Stewart, nice guy, three-time champ. Endurance racing is different, I guess, because there's a need for cooperation between the co-drivers. Acosta is a, I'm back to, you know, GP here. Acosta is at once what I love and hate about Moto 3. I watch the guy racing around at over 200 kilometers per hour for 45 minutes like a pro, and I'm in awe. Then he takes off his helmet, and I see that he has braces on his teeth. It makes me feel like a pedophile. I don't know about that, but all right.
It gets better, people. Hold on.
It's like walking down the street behind a good-looking butt that she turns around and you see that she's 15 or 16. Oh, God, I've been there before. I think we've all done it. Like, no, no, why are you a baby? No. You have to slap yourself and say shame on you. That doesn't have to go into the show. Yeah, actually, it was kind of funny. It was a good laugh there. In the meanwhile, let's hope that Marc Marquez and Jorge Martin get healthy quickly and make this year the best season ever. You know, I didn't even read that before I threw it in the show. I just wanted to get that naturally as it came to me. I'm glad I did because that was great.
Yeah, so let me go through this one and then you can jump in wherever. So let's go back to this endurance racing thing about the, you know, Christensen, McNish, and Capello, and they weren't winning in the closed top Audi. They had won in the open cockpit Audi. Sorry. My point was, and I didn't emphasize this, and I don't think I got it out there correctly, so I want to try to get out there this time. These guys are like Rossi now. They have something new, i.e. closed top car, and they couldn't make it work at first. They had to adapt. They had to change. Rossi has a new bike, a new life, a new team. He's trying to adapt, and he's not adapting to that new bike as well as, say, Vinales or Quartararo. Like, Quartararo makes that bike look super good, but Rossi's struggling with it. And we haven't really talked about this, but this, I think, is now the end of the Rossi racing thing. He has his right to stay at the party as long as he wants. However, I don't think anybody's going to take him home when the evening ends. And that being said, you know, he might be going to his own team in MotoGP. We'll get to that. But the thing is that Rossi has lost or doesn't have whatever it takes to adapt and change to the motorcycle the way that the young guys have. And that's kind of what happened with the guys in the Audi team. They came back. They made it happen one last time because they dug deep. And, I mean, they dug really deep to be able to do that and to win. And Rossi's in the same spot. He's going to either figure out how to dig really super deep, or he's just going to have to sort of, you know, walk away into the sunset. But then we get on to the point about, where is Superbike when you need them? Yeah, I agree. If Dorna owns both series, why they're not running on opposite weekends of each other, I have no idea, because that would be great for me. I would love that, because I like Superbikes as much as I like MotoGP. Okay, yeah, I like MotoGP better, but still, I love motorcycle racing, so hey, why not have them on opposite weeks? And then they've got those long gaps in between things that happened this season, and it's like, And the other thing, too, is like, why do I have to buy, if I have a season's pass to MotoGP, why do I have to buy a season's pass to watch Superbike? That doesn't seem to equate to me. Like, I should pay one price and get both of them, because how else are you going to expand out your what's going on, right? I mean, or give me a discount at least, right? Hey, oh, I see that you're a MotoGP fan and you have the pass. Then you get the other pass at half off or whatever. Give me some discount, right? So that part there. Do you want any part of this, Skyler, or do you want me to just keep going?
No, I get a couple things before I get too all right, lost in thought. But the whole Rossi thing, I agree with you that, we're seeing the tail end of his career for sure. And we might be at the tip of the tail here sooner than later. It's a shame because he's not getting that, like, you know, farewell tour. There's a small part of me that thinks that he was hoping by this year the fans would get back and he can go around. I think he at least deserves that, a goodbye year. And hopefully, I don't know what his contract situation currently is, if it's a 1 year or 2 year, if there's options.
I thought it was 1 year.
I think one it year. Is as well. And like you said, maybe he goes to sets up his own race team. Or when he sets up his own race team, he just takes over one of those seats just to drive the funds over there and get the attention on his team, which would not be a bad thing and bad way to start it. And then he can do his farewell tour then. But yeah, this happens to everyone. This happens to the best. We see them all eventually trail off. And I mean, to be doing it this long, to still be, you know, up there, but we can see it though, right? Everybody else on the Yamaha at the front, he's at the back complaining about nothing is working. And it's like, at that point, I don't know, man, it's not working for you, but you're also not working for it. So It's just that when those intersect, and then, you know, you've got new things to do.
Did you ever see the interview where they ask him about Acosta, about Pedro? And Rossi's like, yeah, you know, he needs to concentrate on himself and he, you know, handles some advice. There's not some advice or yada yada. And then they ask him, they said, well, maybe you'll be racing against him when he gets to MotoGP. And Rossi's look on his face like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, he didn't have that quick, witty Rossi comeback, like, right off the top like he usually does. It took him a second to process all that. And he's like, oh, yeah, maybe so. And it's like, you know, if he hesitates that long about him thinking about racing, he's thinking about stopping. I really think that he is. But
Rossi's whole thing, he's always been, he loves racing because he has fun doing it. He's not having fun right now. No, it's just work. And, you know, he's got nothing to prove to anybody, right?
Nope.
So at this point, it's like, yeah, he doesn't have to do and risk his life, injuries, and you just be time to go get fat and get off the bike and do whatever the hell you want. So,
hey, you want to go ride the ranch with the kids and stuff? Sure, go ahead.
Yeah.
But no problem there, man.
Yep. What was your next one? Oh, for World Superbike. World Superbike, yeah, it's a bit of a mess with that. It has been for some time. And that was another reason why Dorna, when they came out and scooped it up, to try to help the series out. But the thing is, there hasn't, to me, been a lot of help they've been able to provide using the momentum of MotoGP, or trying to, I mean, you'll see it on the MotoGP website. You'll see article updates in regards to World Superbike. But like you said, there's nothing that's driving people towards World Superbike. There's less races, more gaps between races. They take like the whole month of August off, right, for most of the time. What was it, like 2 years ago, we had something crazy. It was like a 7 or 9 week break. It was like two seasons. Yeah. It was insane. Like, their one race like ended in July, and the next one came around sometime in like October. Like, no joke.
Yeah, it was like middle of September or something. They raced somewhere.
Yeah, it was insane. You know, I understand why, for cost and revenue, why they're trying to, you know, maybe not split up the packages. I don't really think any of the streaming services necessarily work this way. But then again, most streaming services aren't. They don't have a product that's losing customers right now, whereas their Superbike might. I can only assume that they're not doing as well just by the limited number of races they seem to have every year. Because if the show was good, everybody wants to bring the circus to town. And they're more Eurocentric than I think they've ever been for in recent history, I should say. I don't know. I'm sure this is a topic that we can go into in great depth on another show in another time. But World Superbike does need some help. And maybe offering some kind of like extension of your current MotoGP pass, like you had mentioned, a discount or like, you know, 3 weekend preview. I don't know how they would do it. Maybe that would help. But as I think Jules always says, that motorcycle racing is a niche sport. And people who are already on the pass are the people who are going to buy it anyway, and getting them to go somewhere else, they would have already chosen that path, right? So, tough sell.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about being ruthless and being champions. Yes, Gary, I completely agree with you 150,000%. You got to be a bastard on track to have multiple championships. There is no question about that whatsoever. If you don't believe me, you know, think about it this way. Once Rosberg won his Formula One World Championship, that is Rosberg Jr., he said, "I quit, I'm retired, and I'm done, because to beat Lewis Hamilton, that drove me to a place that I had to be someone I did not like being." And that tells you all that you need to know about what Hamilton is as a world champion and everybody else. Again, Rossi, Marquez, and probably Acosta all smile, but they're ruthless bastards on racetrack, and that is what it takes to win championships and to be on the top of your game. And quite honestly, this Moto 3 season is absolutely amazing with Acosta and what the kid has done. It is incredible to see what he is doing at 16 years of age, and when he is an old head on young shoulders over and over again. Multiple times, what he says, how he says it, what he thinks, how it's about the team and how he works with them, and the racecraft alone of what this kid has is utterly amazing. How he rides a motorcycle and what he can do with a motorcycle is fascinating to watch. It is as fascinating to watch what he does on a motorcycle as it is to watch what Marc Marquez does on a motorcycle. I don't want to jinx the kid, but this is a guy who is going to probably set records somewhere along the way, whether that's youngest MotoGP world champion, that's possible, youngest pole sitter, very possible, you know, all that kind of stuff is within his grasp, in more titles than anybody else is in the kid's grasp too. He's 16 and he's making this look like a rout when we thought there's no way that anybody else is going to win with him. But that's my take on that part of it.
No, I'm just going to say, I agree. And there we go.
Yeah. And I do hope that Martin gets better back quickly, because yeah, we need him to make this season even more interesting than what it is right now. So yeah. That's what happens when you're racing at the top level and you're pushing it. You're going to have problems.
Yeah, no injury. I mean, this is the top level and with the most risk. Ask Marc Marquez, you know?
Oh, yeah. Speaking of Marc Marquez, since you bring him up right now, I talked to the official doctor of Motopod, Dr. Claire McDowell, and I said, okay, when is Marquez going to be back at the front? She says, last three races of this year, because it's going to take him about a year to build the bone growth and the muscle back to be the muscle memory that he's used to. And he's got to be very careful during this that he does not fall off and damage that. And he had, what, two, three pretty decent offs at Jerez. So
he's playing with fire. He had a pretty sketchy one, too, where he got out to the wall in a quick fashion.
He did. That's very, very true. But, don't look for anything out of Marquez other than top 10s until maybe the last three races of the year at best, people. So that's what the doc says. And I'm going to believe her.
But that's, we got to figure in Marquez's special talent. But, the Honda, again, not the easiest bike to ride. Marquez has to be 100% to do that, or close to, I should say. I don't think these guys are ever at 100% ever in their MotoGP career after the first race. They're so beat up.
I agree with that.
And then you've got guys out there that are just performing right now. So,
yeah.
But anyway, Gary, again, thanks for the email. It brought up some great talking points. It's great to hear from you as always. Remember, folks, if you want to send in an email to ask questions, have discussion, whatever your motorcycle or maybe beer-related topic might be, you can reach us at motopod@motopodcast.com. It goes to all the hosts. If it's something we can quickly answer within emails, one of us will do so. You may even hear from a past host, such as, like I mentioned, Jules. For those of you who don't know who that is, that's Jules Cisek. He's a longtime host of the show and one of the original podcast hosts. So in case you were wondering what that reference was early on. We've got some news to talk about here. Jim, why don't you go ahead and lead us in?
Well, Aprilia signed until 2026, meaning that all the current manufacturers have re-upped until 2026. So that's good. I didn't want to see anybody get lost in there, so that works. It's all good. Ducati is in talks with both Gresini and VR46 as to supply for bikes for next year for MotoGP. Stay tuned on this one, right? This is going to be interesting to see what happens, because if Gresini goes away and goes to a Ducati, where does Aprilia go?
I thought they have their own. They're going to have their own team.
They're going to have their own team now?
Yeah. It's going to be Aprilia factory now,
right? Oh, so it's going to be a factory. So it's not going to be with Gresini,
right?
See, and I thought Gresini was the factory team right now.
They
are. So that explains why Gresini. See, apparently I must have missed that part of the news. All right, fine. Yeah. Moving on.
But that's where who's really on the island now is Aleix Espargaró, right? Because he's hoping they stick with the Aprilia, because he's contracted with Gresini, not the Aprilia team. And the Aprilia team can put whoever they want on their bikes.
Dovizioso.
Yep. So we'll see that there. This does bring up a good thing, because we really do need to stay tuned, because how many bikes can Ducati really supply?
It's starting to become massive, the amount of bikes that they have.
Yeah, that's a big undertaking for them. And
they're a small factory, which is what's amazing to me, that it's they're even talking about it.
Yeah, when other teams say they can't do it, it's like, come on. Well, you can't, or you don't want to.
Well, Yamaha, it's they don't want to, right? Suzuki, it's we can't.
That's the Aprilia, one where it's questionable. I think it's budgetary-wise they can't. They can.
Budgetary-wise, Suzuki can't, right? But factory-wise, Aprilia can't. That's factory super small, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got to wonder why HRC doesn't have more bikes out there than what they have.
I wonder if it's something that has to do more along with like how the factories work with private teams. They have their private bikes out there. Maybe they cap them at so many because they're looking at costs too. Maybe teams don't want to work with the juggernaut that is HRC. Let's be real, the Honda hasn't really been the bike of choice of anybody but Marc Marquez in recent light,
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to have, let's call it a supernatural rider, as opposed to the Marc Marquez, who's the exceptionally supernatural rider, right? You probably aren't going to have anything other than a lot of crash damage with that bike, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you probably would like to try to find a bike that's more friendly.
Yeah, bring up the quotation marks on this one. Easier to ride.
There you go, yeah. And you got to ask yourself, where's KTM in all this too, right? Because if you're KTM and you would have a chance to supply RC16s to Valentino Rossi's VR46, would you or would you not want to do that?
That's a discussion for someone sitting around with cost benefit analysis, right?
The greatest name in motorsport is now linked to you. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but for how long? You know what I mean? Like,
what does it matter? It's still going to be Rossi's MotoGP team. Even if Rossi only rode a year on it.
I don't know. I just don't know if that's gonna really do it for him.
But I look at it for like what it did to KTM and Supercross, because they signed McGrath to a 1-year contract back in the whenever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that paid them huge dividends because that opened up everybody's mind. Well, if McGrath rides that bike, maybe I should go ride that bike. And look what they did. They finally won championships with Dungey and now with Cooper Webb.
Mm-hmm.
But the seed was planted back with, you know, or the early 2000s when or whenever that was,
mm-hmm.
with McGrath.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a marketing department decision, but I got to say that, you know, I'm like, why aren't you talking to them?
Yeah. I just feel like KTM's got such a movement going on. I don't know if they would help them or if they've got to, you know, then put, you know, attention over there. And it's like, no, we got our factory team with Red Bull. Like, we're a big thing. I don't know. I guess this is, I mean, really, it's a discussion. We're going to have to wait and see where everybody goes. Yeah. I mean, hell, it'd be great if Suzuki has some extra bike. The long-rumored second team would be great. So who knows?
I think Rossini would do great if they had Suzuki's.
Yeah, I think that'd be a great team. Would. And then, oh, good, you could put Leish back on the Suzuki as well.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get my hopes up like that, Jim. That's just too exciting. We can't get there. Look, I'm telling you,
there's so many moving parts to this one. This is it. To stay tuned. We're never going to get out of this in an hour.
No.
That ship has sailed.
No. So it never works that way. Place. And I don't even have beer for this show. It's like,
that's terrible.
Nah, I have it. I just, you know, today I need to take a break. It's been like, well, we had like the long weekend for me and everything else. I'm like, let's just dry it out a bit. Let's dry it out. No, don't need any more.
All right, so Fabio Quartararo underwent successful arm pump surgery as a result of what happened during this weekend. I think we all know what happened, but he had an arm pump and they had to get surgery to get it fixed. Oh, let's see. Honda, they admit that they're struggling, and Pol called the weekend a mess, and Nakagami went back to the 2020 chassis to match his career best finish of fourth. Which I think is pretty impressive. So my question is, when are all the other Honda riders going to be back on a 2020 frame? Just saying.
Yeah, it's, you know, this has kind of been Honda's issue, which Rossi so infamously brought to the foresight, is that Honda will tell you, like, we build the bikes, you just ride them. We don't need to listen to the rider thing, right?
Yep.
And maybe some of this is kind of going on again because no one outside of Marc Marquez, and let's be real, I think Marc Marquez on any bike does what he does, or maybe even better. And the fact that, you know, Pol's got a ton of experience. He knows how to develop bikes. He started with the KTM project. He's been on the Yamaha as well. He knows what he's doing. He's a fast kid, and even he's completely lost. Nakagami's been there for a few years. He had to step back. I mean, that means the new bike isn't working out, then something ain't right. And we know Marquez isn't feeling great, but we haven't heard from him. We'll see probably in the next 4 to 5 weeks when he starts feeling more like himself. He's probably going to tell you where the bike doesn't feel great or not. And then, yeah, it's going to be another back foot year for Honda. It's
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then they're going to reset for next year for sure.
Yep. So with that, Rossi and his VR46 brand have a deal, or do they, with Aramco to sponsor the VR46 MotoGP team. So there was an announcement made that, hey, we got Aramco sponsorship, which is the Saudi oil giant, to going to push, you know, mega money into it, kind of like
Petronas. Their control was like, what, 75-80% of the oil in Saudi Arabia, something like that? I mean, massive.
Yeah. They're seriously a monopoly of oil inside of Saudi Arabia.
Well, there is no question
about that. Yeah. Right. So the thing of it is that this caused a huge stink because of the, from basically a civil right, or yeah, civil ooh, rights ooh, issues.
We can use fancy words, political unrest.
Nah, it's not political unrest. Nah. It's just that there's a lot of people that don't like Aramco because they're Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia has, you know, this issue with, you know, women don't get to drive and all these other things that are in there. And I'm not going to go down that list of that road, but
yep. Google, it's
like, I just find it interesting that, like, well, they said, well, yeah, we do. Then it's like, oh, no, we don't. And it's like, well, okay, why are you guys getting over? I mean, fine, everybody can be bent over whatever issue that they have, but anybody watch a couple of Formula One races here lately? There's a big Aramco sign on Formula One, and Formula One is not taking anywhere near the heat that Rossi and his team was taking.
Rossi, like, okay, Formula One has a race in Saudi Arabia this year.
Yes, it does.
Which, there's been some pushback on that a bit.
Yeah, on the race itself, yes, but no one's really pushed back on all the Aramco sponsorship banners that are on the Formula One scene.
We need a soundboard like our boys over at Parc Fermé, because I can drop one for Lewis Hamilton right now. Cash is king.
Yep, there you go. We should do that. We should buy a soundboard for that one.
Right, right. Just get different ones. We're starting to pile up certain ones now. We could get it down.
Yep. But I do think that if Aramco does sponsor his Ducati / whatever Rossi's team's going to have, I think they look pretty cool in blue and white. But that's just me.
Yeah, you know what they can do? Pull the old mission win now thing.
Ooh, yeah. Right? We could do that. Yeah.
For those of you that don't know what that is, Ferrari has mission win now as their Ducati sponsor.
Ducati does. Well, no, they don't. Ducati doesn't anymore.
And
they used to.
That is Marlboro. Obviously, you're not allowed to run tobacco sponsorship on your race vehicles now in F1 or MotoGP. So they come up with clever ways of using Mission Win Now as their subset that they use as sponsorship, and Aramco could do the same thing. They could come up with some. This is our green initiative team, right?
There you
our
go.
Our new solar or wind or whatever the hell it is, and which they already, I think they are actually investing in that because they know it's coming. And then run that as their whole, like, we're going to bring cleanliness and all this. And that way everyone's like, oh, you're green. Stop asking about that other stuff. We're just worried about this, right? And then after about 2 months, then everyone kind of forgets about it. You know, humans are fickle with the new thing, and that's that.
Yep. Agreed. So I love this little tidbit here. Lorenzo calls Rossi slow and imprecise after the race in Jerez. Lorenzo not mincing any words there on that one.
My man has kind of agree with the guy lately, hasn't he? I think he just doesn't care. I guess he knows he's not coming back now, and he's just like, yeah, I'll just say what I want to say now.
Yeah, they talk about the filter being turned off on him.
Yeah, the thing is, though, he's not necessarily wrong with the things he's saying. It just doesn't need to be said, I think. Sometimes I think
it comes down to that he's just saying what everybody is thinking, and so he looks like the idiot saying it, where everybody else is just sort of like, yeah, Rossi's that way, but he is a 9-time champ, so no one wants to say it.
True.
Yeah. So there was testing after the race at Jerez, and Brad Binder thinks that KTM has found something with the front end of the RC16. Stay tuned for that at Le Mans. We all know how much of a front end track that is, especially the first turn. So hopefully they do have something there. And the same thing can be said by Paul Espargaro, because he seems to think the same thing about the Honda front end. And I have to ask you, has Jenny Anderson unlocked the magic at HRC? Because he was only like a tenth slower than Nakagami on the 2021 bike. Or Paul on the 2021 bike was only like a tenth slower in the test. And Nakagami was riding on the 2020 bike, which he apparently prefers. So
TBD.
To be determined, that's right. So again, these are things to look for upcoming at Le Mans that we need to really, you know, kind of focus on, see what's going down.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Well, I guess with that, we're just going to go right into MotoGP qualifying, right?
Yeah, we can go ahead and do that. I can take a little bit of Q1 action, as I did watch some of the qualifying. Now, with Q1, we saw Marc Marquez was down in Q1 again, which I think at this point we shouldn't be too surprised that he is there. He is making his comeback, and GP is insanely close this year. It's a second, covers the top 12 almost at every qualifying we've had so far this year. So, I mean, when you're coming back from injury, you can easily lose the second at the top level. So, no surprise. In the beginning of Q1, though, it was looking like the KTM versus Honda was what the battle was going to be to get out of Q1. But we did get to see a classic Mark Marquez save, which was nice. Dragged it out there and brought it back up. And then towards the end, we just had a little bit of a mess of riders that who was it that went in deep there, Jim? And then I think it was maybe Oliveira, I think, went in deep. And then everybody like sat up going into the last corner and almost like ping pong off of each other.
It was Oliveira.
Okay, yeah. It was about 7-8 riders all following each other, and they all followed each other deep into dry sack there. But that was on right before they had to go out and do it on the final lap. But in the end, Bender and Morbidelli were actually the two riders to secure their places to go over into Q2. So we got to Q2. The man of the hour again was once again Fabio Quartararo. He went out there and threw down the hammer very early. But after the first go around, because you know how everybody goes out, does a couple banker laps, they come back in and swap their tires out. The field was only separated by 0.8, and that's pretty nuts, right?
That's close. I mean, that's super, super close. That's about as fast as you can blink.
Yeah, yeah. And then maybe process some things too. Morbidelli had a very nice save in this session as well, a la Mark Marquez in the first one. But in the end, the Yamahas were king again. Fabio Quartararo setting the pole once more, looking pretty much unstoppable going into the race there. Franco Morbidelli had a nice Q2 there in second. Jack Miller grabbing the final spot on the front row there in third. He is followed by his teammate Pecco Bagnaia, who's having a great second season here. Taka Nakagami was there in fifth. Zarco followed by Vinales, Spargaro, Rins, Mir, Bender, and Bottle. Again, Suzuki qualifying, not their strong set.
No, I think what surprises me is that Vinales is where he is. Because, you know, he had that bad weekend prior in Portimao.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like he can't get his brain wrapped around going fast again. It's like he had it figured out in the desert. And then they get to Portimao and he just, like, everything went wrong and conspired against him. And I think he's sort of kind of threw the toys out of the pram again, right? And then he's seventh. And so it's like, okay, well, you know, we'll see what happens on race day.
Speaking of which, so we get to the race. Now, Miller, he had a great hole shot. He gets out there and gets to the front. Quartararo, being on the Yamaha, didn't have the best of starts, but he wasn't mired down in the field. I think he was around about fourth through the beginning. So we wanted to watch his progress as it was going. Early on, then, we lost Alex Marquez. He had another crash. Jim, has he seen the end of a race yet this year?
I think he finished the races in the desert. He just hasn't finished anything since then.
Okay, yeah. He's having definitely a tough start. That wasn't a slight at him. I was actually just asking because I know it's been a bit of a rough one for him. Bender went down on lap two. So maybe those front end woes that he was talking about that hopefully they have corrected were making their ugly appearance there. We then lost Rins, who crashed out in lap three. So, I mean, it was going down left and right. I think that literally is the case because it was one of lap there in the beginning. He ran wide in turn six. And Rins is just, you know, he's an interesting rider. Very fast when he wants to. But when he makes a mistake, it, like, goes all the way. Like, he can't just make, like, a little wibble with it. He screws up, he ruins his entire race weekend and sometimes his championship quite early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we become sort of desensitized to how difficult it is to ride these motorcycles at the edge because we see Marquez just simply save incredible, basically crashes and ride away again and then just basically go obliterate track records like 30 seconds after that just happened, where us mere mortals would be trying to change underwear in that meantime. So maybe it's just Rins just isn't quite there which I think this is more to the point. Everyone's sort of gotten their game upped and Suzuki kind of stayed pat maybe to some extent. So now we have to ride the Suzuki a whole lot harder to go just as fast as what we did before.
There could be a bit of that.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of that because, I mean, they weren't good in qualifying last year, but they were able to race to the front. And you got to admit, by after the first three or four races, Quartararo had kind of lost whatever momentum he had, and it just wasn't going for him. And so Suzuki just happened to be the most consistent, best team there was. Now I think they're still as fast as they were, but everybody else has sort of moved on just a little bit. And these two guys, Mir and Rins, have to ride a whole hell of a lot harder than what they want to. And I can't get a good qualifying session in because they can't make the most of the soft tire. So it's just kind of a double whammy kind of a thing happening for them.
Could be. Now, by the time we hit lap four, with the man we were watching for to take the lead, Fabio did make his way to the front, and he had been setting an extremely fast race pace during his practices. So we all expected him to go out and push the lead. But, you know, as I was watching this, I noticed Mir had been getting loose a lot during this, and I noticed that all the guys there from second on back were pushing really, really hard to keep up the pace. So the pace was hot from the very beginning. And that kind of explains why maybe some of the guys were crashing out, because it wasn't that Dovizioso get out to the front and slow everybody down for 10 laps, kind of let's warm up and go. Like, no, it was old Jorge Lorenzo style. Get out front and slam it from the beginning and see who can keep up. We lost Andrea Bastianini there on lap 10. And then Brad Binder crashed for the second time weekend, and it was time for Brad to go ahead and pack it up after that. By this time, KTM was just nowhere in this race. You know, we thought maybe, you know, different tracks in the beginning weren't really suiting them, but it looks like they definitely have a major issue with the front end of that bike, where Brad is overriding it and no one else can get even close to being comfortable with it. Morbidelli and Bad Night had a very interesting battle at this time going on back and forth. And we were starting to see the field spread out. Quartararo was starting to pull a nice big fat gap, and he looked like he was on his way to wrapping up another Jerez impressive dominating race. But then on lap 14, Quartararo started to lose pace, and it didn't look right because he didn't lose a tenth here, a tenth there, and like his tires are going away. He just lost pace outright. It was gone, and then Miller started running him down, and then two laps later, Miller had hit the front. At this point, Fabio, with 10 to go, he was starting to look like he was having issues. So it started like, oh, maybe he's got a mechanical issue because now the bike won't go. And it's like, okay, either his bike is blown up, or I mean, his tires have completely blown, or the bike is just like it's skipping, or the traction control is all screwed up. Something's happening. And I'm thinking to myself, like last year, like remember he would get halfway through a race and fade because his tires, he just could not have any side grip. I'm like, is this what's going to be going on? And it's like, all right, no, no. And they continue on down the race. Fabio just falls back. I mean, he just keeps going back. It's actually pretty disheartening to watch him go backwards after having such a dominant weekend. We would then go on to the end of the race. We find out he was struck with severe arm pump, which Jim had mentioned earlier in the news that he did now have successful surgery to go ahead and try to correct that. But then we get back to the race. We did have a nice pass for Taka Nakagami. Did go around the outside of Aleix Espargaró, so as Jim had mentioned there, he had his best result of the season. But in the end, it was Jack Miller, after all of the talk, after some of the doubt, even by some of us here on the show, mainly myself, if he was going to be able to do it, Jack grit down, bared it, and brought home his first dry win for Ducati. And to make it even sweeter, on the podium was there was a teammate there in second place. So Pekka Bennei there in second, and Morbidelli rounding out the podium there with a nice solid race for Yamaha. Again, you know, on that 2019 bike, Morbidelli's doing magic with that thing, Jim.
Oh, yeah, completely, you know. Let's talk a little bit about Quartararo and his arm pump.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was trying to think of ways to describe arm pump to everybody because it was his right, basically his right arm that was having the arm pump issue. You ever go to the dentist and get shot up with Novocaine to get a cavity filled? And you know how it doesn't feel right, but you know it's moving and around? That's kind of what arm pump is kind of like, only but make like a tingly, needly feel in there as well, right? So the problem is you to break into a corner, you have to have immense amount of feel coming back through your senses from the handlebar back up through your arm, and you got to be able to know how much pressure you're putting on the brake and get the feel coming back from that. When your arm basically just goes numb, you have no feel. So you could grab the brake and you think you get enough on there and you run wide because you don't have enough. So you try to correct at the next corner and you pull harder, but you're pull too hard because, again, you can't feel anything. So now you're short to the apex. For Quartararo even to finish, given the look on his face at how bad he hurt was impressive to me. I mean, and maybe that's what champions, you know, that is what champions have to do to win races and to win championships. You got to get as many points as you possibly can out of this whole scenario. And, you know, he did. He got some championship points out of this, which is what he had to do, which, you know, that's important. But yeah, arm pump like that is not funny. It's so much about feel. It's so much about how the fact that you can't tell what you're doing. You can't even tell that you're pulling the brakes on sometimes. And it's scary. And for him to ride through it was impressive to me.
Absolutely. And, you know, once you saw him at the end, he got back, couldn't like lift his arm off the bike.
Nope.
It's not just the you can't feel, you know, like how much pressure you're putting. I mean, it's hard to just hang on because it's both ways. It's closing and opening your hand, right?
Yeah, it's the whole nine yards because it's like it's kind of like having like being shocked by electricity, right? Mm-hmm. You can't do anything with your arm. You're at the willy nilly of whatever the electricity going through that part of your body is doing to it, right? So some people it opens up and your hands open, you can't close it. Some people your hands closed, you can't open it. It's that same thing. It's terrible. It just doesn't work. And it just, you know, now you're trying to compensate for everything else. And you know what? If it had been his left hand, you could take it off on a straightaways, although they're not that long here. Try to shake it out, try to get some blood flow in there. You know, part of it too now is all these guys are experiencing probably like 1.7 Gs or more to break these MotoGP bikes. I mean, we're starting to border on the limit of what the human body is going to be able to take, to be honest, at this point. And it's one of those things. And the other thing too is like you have to really concentrate on your breathing and get yourself moving. And John McGinnis says this in his book, Built for Speed. He's like, you know, you get the Solby straights and stuff. You got to get your breathing back under control. You got to start really getting some deep breaths and put it in there because you got to get some oxygen to those muscles to help them keep from going into arm pump, which is basically what's happening. You're basically just restricting all the blood flow, easy for me to say, through the arm, and it becomes numb because basically it's getting a lack of oxygen because it just can't pump enough blood to it. So, yeah, it's amazing ride by Quartararo. Still, an even probably more amazing ride by Jack Miller, given everything that he's been through and what people said about him and yada, yada, yada. And he shouldn't really have the factory bike. Well, he did prove that he deserved the factory bike. He was there when it needed. I think this takes a lot of pressure off of his shoulders. I think now he can ride a little freer. He's done it. I look for bigger and better things from Miller as we go along. And, you know, he's got that first dry win, you know, hey, I really beat everybody this time. It wasn't, well, it was raining, you know, there's not an excuse for it, right? There is, you won and that's how you do it. So good on him.
That's right. You know, and I, you know, hopefully after his surgery, you know, Fabio can come back because the form that he is in now, he needs to continue on with this form and maximize this. So when Marquez gets back to his full potential, we might have someone that can go toe-to-toe weekend after weekend with Marquez. That's what it's going to take.
I think Miller could be there too. I mean, I think conceivably you could have Miller.
But I don't think Ducati the bike can.
See, that's where I differ with you. I think the Ducati is better than we think it is. It's being masked by guys who ride in two completely different directions. Miller rides way different than the way Bagnaia rides. And so consequently, they're at two opposite ends of the spectrum. And we don't know how good the bike is or isn't because there's not a true showing of what the bike's potential is because they can't go in the same direction. Because whatever setup you have for Miller doesn't work for Bagnaia, and whatever Bagnaia has isn't working for Miller. And so they have to each find their own way, and it's going to take a little bit more time for them to build that relationship with the bike and the crew and get it to where those things work for them. I mean, I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. I'm not ashamed to admit it. But I think the Ducati is one or two tweaks away from being there with Yamaha and Honda and a fully healthy Marquez, and you get all three of them are going to be right there.
I'm just not sure because it doesn't have the corner speed. It doesn't matter who's riding it. And they're not keeping up with Suzuki and Yamaha through the corners. And they're
Honda.
Yeah, and they're having to cut their power down because they're burning through fuel, like we saw in the desert. So I still don't think the bike is quite there because of now their big power advantage is starting to go away from them, right? Other people have made a lot of power. Honda's very fast. Hell, KTM's very fast. They just don't have the frame there yet over KTM. But like I said, happy to be wrong. I want to see all the bikes up there duking it out. And I think this year is going to be another weird year after about the halfway point. It's still early days. Remember this time last year, we sold the championship off to Quartararo. Like, oh, that's a done deal. He's going to run away with it. And ooh, wait a minute. So a lot to play for here. But it is good that we're seeing already different winners. We're seeing that everyone seems to have a pretty competitive bike outside of maybe Honda this year. But then again, they may turn a corner after testing, so we don't know. But finishing up your results there, like we said, Taka Nakagami over there on fourth. Juan Mir, he salvaged a nice fifth for Suzuki. Alicia Spargo almost cracking the top five once more there on the Aprilia. And then we got Vinales in seventh. So he pretty much just stayed where he was at and kind of hovered around there. Maybe that was a good thing for him. He kind of like said, okay, I'm not last anymore, and now he can turn on, go fast. We shall see. He was followed by Zarco, who seems to have lost a little bit of pace. Maybe a little bit of confidence after a couple of crashes there on the Panamera Ducati. Mark Marquez getting another top 10, so nice job there in ninth. And then he actually beat his teammate, Paul Espargaro. So Honda, yeah, they've definitely got some stuff going on. Espargaro shouldn't take too much of a hit from losing to Mark Marquez, even though Marquez is coming back from injury. He does know the bike very well, whereas Paul does not. So much, much more to play for the season. I'm excited that we are just at the very beginning of this nice long story.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Quartararo having problems means that you got a shakeup in the world championship standings. Congratulations to Pecco Bagnaia, who's now leading the world championship by 2 points over Quartararo, with Vinales now 14 points behind. Then Mir, Zarco, Miller, Asperger, Morbidelli, Rins, and Brad Binder. It's early, early days, but you got to think that the world championship is going to come from those first four guys, probably. And maybe Mir is going to probably maybe fall off a little bit more, but it's going to be an incredible battle and one that we're going to have to watch closely as the season continues.
I would say if there's anyone that's going to mess with the top that are not there now, it'd be Morbidelli. He might be able to have a nice run mid to late season that kind of brings him back towards the front. He's not too far out from the top four. He is a bit of a stretch away from the guys at the top, but we've seen stranger things.
No, we saw really strange last year, so this year could probably be just as strange. But I gotta think it's the top four guys for the championship right now, but it's all to play for. All to play for.
Yeah, and Jack could get on a run now too. So
he could put string two or three races together and get two or three wins. You're good, you know. I mean, we're going to Le Mans, which is, I don't want to say it's a real Ducati track, but I mean, with the acceleration that they have between a lot of those turns and back and forth, I mean, man, you got to think that they run pretty decent there.
Yeah, Yamaha's had good success there as well. I mean, hell, Honda too. So that's because Mark Marquez. Definitely probably another Ducati Yamaha battle. I don't know if Quartararo is going to be fit for that.
But didn't Miller have arm pump surgery in between with a week off?
I feel like someone did. He might have been him.
Miller, I think it was Miller who did it.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is too, it's not like a surgery to repair anything. You just cut open the muscle to relieve the pressure. So, We'll see.
Let's move on to Moto2. Let's do it. All right. So Moto2, in that first qualifying session, was Bobier, Baldassare, Della Porta, Arbolino, Vietti, and Ramirez. Cam was on top of the timesheets there for a little bit, guys. I really thought, you know, it was looking good. Montello had a crash at turn 11. And then we had Manzi was in the pits, and, you know, he gets pimped at the very end by Buliga. You know, he's sitting there for like the last 90 seconds of the time that was there. But Cam, Ramirez, and they go and Buliga, all go, and Boben Schneider all go through, and they get into that all important QP2 session. So then In QP2, Remy was looking tough. I mean, I think Remy probably looking as good as he's probably been. I mean, he went out there and put down a 140.6 on the first run, and that was pretty impressive. Kinnett crashed at turn 13. Roberts was down at turn 6. Jake Dixon was down at turn 6. It was like a crash-a-thon that was kind of going on there, and you're going, geez, people, like, what's going on here in Moto 2? And Lowe's was on a flyer, and then he had two moments at the last turn, and that cost him his chance at pole. It cost him a lot, to be honest with you, because when the dust finally settled from all of that, Gardner had his pole position. DiGiantonio was second. Then it was Bezzecchi, Fernandez. Lowe's was shuffled all the way to fifth. Then Vierge, Fernandez, Joe Roberts, Iagura, Jake Dixon, Kinnett, and Navarro are all in the top 12. So there's your first four rows. When the lights go out on the race, before the lights went out, I should say, we found out that Jake Dixon would not start due to a concussion. So, hey, there's apparently some form of concussion protocol that's being applied here for whichever way that it is. I mean, we know that that's a very important issue, very important thing. So it was good to see that hey, well, Jake did have.
Yes. I think what it is that they listened to Motopod and they were like, these guys are on something. We should probably pay attention to these concussion deals. I'm pretty sure that's how that went down, Jim.
Okay. You live in your alternative universe and I'll live in mine. I was happy to see it, though. I was happy to see that somebody said, hey, you're not going to start because you have a concussion. I mean, I was happy to see it. I'll take it no matter how we can get it. But there. Just before the green flag was there, we had Chantra, who was sort of out of position. And I think he got confused because Dixon wasn't there. So I think Chantra kind of got caught out by all that when he came back to the grid. Like, well, there's a space. Like, should I be there? Should I not be there? I don't know. But DiGiantonio took a whole shot. Gardner was right there with him. Bezzecchi was right there. Then you had Fernandez. And you had both Fernandez. You had Fernandez Augusto, and you had Fernandez Raul, and then you had Chavi Verhe, and then you had Lowe's. Lowe's had a very bad start. It was, I think, he wheelied it off the line. He got bumped around a little bit. He had a terrible, terrible start. The whole race, Lowe's did not look like himself, and he did not look like the guy who won the two races at opening rounds in Qatar. And he did not, you know, he didn't do himself any favors at Portimao with a crash in the first turn. Him and that bike have sort of lost their ways, and they just don't know how to dance with each other right now. And I'm not sure what it is, but I'm sure that, you know, Sam's going to get back on top of this. Augusto Fernandez was down at turn 6, and Buliga was down as well. So separate incidents, all at the same turn, they were both down. But it was DiGiantonio in front of Gardner, in front of Raul Fernandez, Lowe's, and then Bezzecchi and Ferre. Chantra was also down, and he got up, and he was holding his wrist. I haven't seen anything on that. Hopefully he's actually okay. But wow, DiGiantonio just sort of like decides to sort of like check out.
Yeah, he made it boring.
He had like, huh, what?
He made it boring.
He did. He was out front, had a 2.7 gap after three laps, or after we had 12 laps. He had a 2.7 gap. Fernandez was right there. Gardner was right there then. So that race for second and third was pretty good. Bezzecchi and Lowe's were having a good time. Roberts had got to eighth. Cam was 12th. Bezzecchi could not get by Gardner. I mean, he kept trying. He kept trying. He kept trying. He tried different places, different turns. He finally got it to stick. So Lowe's, again, is not having a great race. Not, you know, like I said, he's got something he's got to work out there. Albert Arenas crashes out. That was a bad weekend for him, the Moto 3 champion from last year. I mean, that, you know, could have gone any worse. You know, he was in second qualifying session, or first qualifying session, and then had this crash out of here. But DiGiantonio, basically, nothing really changes. It's DiGiantonio, it's Fernandez, it's Bezzecchi, it's Gardner, and it's Lowe's. And then Corsi has a crash at turn 11, and it was a big low side that turned into a huge tumble that rolled around on there on that. Bezzecchi finally got past Fernandez, and he was now on to second. But there was DiGiantonio was out front; he was kind of gone. There wasn't a whole lot going on in there. Although I have to give a shout out to Iagura, who was now there in the top 10, top seven or eight. He had gotten past Roberts and Kinnett, and Cam was hanging on there at the end of that sort of that group. But the top five guys were definitely gone, and nobody was going to upset them. Gardner went deep at turn six, and Lowe's gets by, so not really a good move by it for Gardner. Then Lowe's and Gardner's get Fernandez at turn two, which that was like a it was a good hip check in the way we went. But the race finishes off with DiGiantonio basically just gone. he had a 1.7 second lead over Bezzecchi, who finished in second. Lowe's did salvage a podium again. Well, we talk about it, champions do champion rides. Well, you know, Lowe's had a bike that probably wasn't the best, and he wound up getting it onto the podium, which is what he needed to do. Remy, after being on pole, could muster only a fourth position. Then Rilo Fernandez, his teammate, Chavi Verhey, sixth. Iaguro was seventh. Joe Roberts, eighth. Kinnett, ninth. Marcel Schroeder, 10th. Ramirez, 11th. Navarro, 12th. Manzi, 13th. And then Baldessari, 14th. And the last points getter was Bo Benschneider. So it tightens things up in the championship. Gardner is on 69 points. Lowe's is now 66 and only three behind. The championship is probably between those two, although I will not count Raul Fernandez out of it. He's on 63 points, so he's only three behind. This championship is about these top three guys right now. Nobody else has got the potential except for maybe DiGiantonio. If he can get his mind straight and can continue to ride like he has been, he'll leap up. But in fourth in the championship is Bezzecchi, who seems to be slowly making progress. I would have thought Bezzecchi would have made a lot better progress in Moto 2, given how he looked in Moto 3. But apparently,
Moto 2 last year. I mean, he was banging away up there towards the top. He came on fire there after the halfway season and was giving his teammate Luca Marini a run for the money. In fact, he looked like the better rider at the end of the season than Marini did.
True. But it's like this year, it's like you expected that form to kind of carry over, and it's like he's sort of fumbling around a little bit, which kind of shocks me a little bit. Like, maybe this is a late season guy. He's just going to turn it on and run all four or five wins in a row, which could really make this championship interesting, right?
The other tough part about it is, too, is Remy's on a different bike now. And so that's a new player, essentially, right?
Well, Remy's like, on the best. Remy, I think, is on the best team in the paddock.
Yes. So
it's either Mark VDS, which was where Lowe's is, right? Mm-hmm. Or Io.
Yep.
They're the two best Moto 2 teams.
Yeah.
Period.
And they've got probably the two best riders in the field right
exactly.
now. Sam Lowe's, he's definitely going to be there this year, like you said. I think Bezzecchi, he's not a whole heap of points. He's only 10 points, 13 out of the entire championship. So that's, one good race could turn your fortune quite quickly there. Mm. DiGiantonio, he's got to keep up his strong form. But like you said, those are the guys that we all mentioned there for the championship, because
it's a big drop then.
Yeah, because to Joe Roberts, who we wanted to be in the championship hunt, and he still maybe can be, but there's two problems I'm seeing right now with this, is that he's already got quite a bit of ways back in the championship already. He's got to recover some 30-some-odd points, right? But I haven't seen a race out of Joe yet with that bike that shows me that he is going to figure it out and go to the front all of a sudden, because he may get faster, but these guys at the front right now are so good that he's gonna have to make a major leap. And no slight against Joe, I think anybody who comes after him in the championship, all these guys would have to make an incredible leap this year that I just don't know if that's gonna happen in one season.
Yeah, I agree, but I think you gotta realize, I think Gardner's name is penciled in for a MotoGP seat. I think Lowe's name is written pretty much in stone for MotoGP seat, wouldn't you think?
I would assume as much, especially because Sam does have some experience, and he could definitely make a return even to Aprilia. Now that they kind of got the bike up there, I think he deserves another shot. I think Gardner for sure is
Aprilia
a guy.
Aprilia needs two factory riders.
Yeah.
I mean, they obviously wanted, this is the bigger question in all this is, did Gersini want Joe Roberts, or did Aprilia want Joe Roberts?
Great question.
Because if we're going to have our own factory Aprilia team, who are you going to put on it?
Mm-hmm.
Don't know. I mean, but this is the fascinating part of this, right? I think a lot of this depends on where everybody is in this championship.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And, it's like, But of all the people that are in the top 10, big shout out to Agura. He looks good on this mm-hmm. on this bigger bike. Yeah, he's one of these things.
Yeah, I was gonna say he made the step to Moto2 very nicely.
Yes, I mean he's doing far better than what Arenas is, and Arenas was the champion from last year.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, granted, he is on the Indometsu Team Asia Honda bike, which is not a slouch team, but it is not. It's not IO. It's not Mark VDS, right? And it's not a Taltrans, but still, it's a good team. There's no question about that. But his transformation onto the Moto2 bike has been more seamless than anybody else's who came from the Moto3 scene. So, remains to be seen and follow this, but a good race. Points championship just gets tighter. The guys at the front that you want to be there are there. And so week in, week out, I think there's going to be some fabulous racing here. I don't, if it's only Remy Lowe's and Fernandez and Bezecchi and Gigi Antonio throw it in there every now and then, it's going to be awesome.
No, it's going to be good. Moto2 is finally starting to, I think we're going to have a season that Moto2 is going to look of old, where South American races, these guys are going to battle all the way to the end. And that's good. We need that. Yep. Because
let's try to get through Moto3, man.
I was gonna say, because in comparison, it's gonna bring us over to Moto3, which was probably the best. No, it wasn't. Probably,
oh my god, that race was amazing.
The best race of the weekend, maybe the season so far.
No, the season so far was still the second race in Qatar. Sorry.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right on that.
But this one has that different flair, right? Because of what happens in qualifying. Which I'll do qualifying, you do the race. How's that?
Sounds good.
All right. So in qualifying, in Q1, Pedro, wait a minute. What's wrong with the kid? That motorcycle looked like crap. Like the back end would go, the front end would go. Everybody's like, oh, what's going to happen when Acosta winds up getting into adversity? What's going to happen to him? Well, here's adversity, because he's in the first qualifying session along with Foggia, Toba, Garcia, and Alcoba, right? So he's there. Now, Pedro had a tip-off, so he has to get through QP1. He's got moments, he's got problems with the front, he's got problems with the back, but whatever it is, the kid puts it together to get through. So Pedro, Guerrera, Tatai, and Alcoba all get through that session. I mean, this kid settled in. He came back into the pits after that first run. They talked about it. They made a small change. It wasn't enough, but it was enough to get him through, which is what you're looking for. So then we get into Q2, and I mean, Tatsuki Suzuki just threw down fast laps. I mean, that boy just showed up and said, okay, here it is. I'm going fast. I'm like, whoa, like this guy has a special sort of place with Jerez because he just is flying. Now, Darren Binder had a crash at turn 7. He had a big high side near the exit, and that was gone, man. Suzuki and Minho, they missed their last laps because, again, everybody was sort of trying to time backwards, and I guess people don't understand how countdowns and stopwatches work because they couldn't get around in time to get their last laps. It didn't really matter, but Pedro gets there to Alcoba it's Alcoba, not Acosta. I'm going to screw it up all the time, people. Just get used to it. But Alcoba just gets into second. So it was Suzuki followed by Alcoba, Minho, Rodrigo, Fanati, McPhee, Bender, Sasaki, Antonelli, wait for it, Anshu, Guevara, Slack. Now finally 13th is Acosta. The kid's 13th on the grid on a motorcycle that he can't make work, which sets up what happens in the race even more incredible to it, especially considering who winds up being there. But that's enough foreshadowing. You tell me how the race went down, and we'll talk about it later because it's impressive.
So, as we know, going into the Moto3 race, qualifying, while it is important, it isn't at the same time because these boys are going to mix it up rather good. Suzuki, continuing from his good form of qualifying, he got the whole shot and got out to the early lead. Now, McPhee, who at the beginning of this year we knew was going to be a championship contender, he's pretty much already taking himself out of championship condition. He high-sided, and man, he was so, so lucky because he high-sided in front of the whole Moto3 field, just about, and everybody missed him.
That was impressive. That was some great riding by a bunch of guys to get McPhee. I mean, McPhee's obviously going, he's going off on a tangential direction to what's happening on the racetrack. That helps a little bit, but still, everybody was heads up and missed him.
Yep, which is good.
Thumbs up to the, everybody there. It's great riding.
Yeah, and yeah, I just got to say, though, McPhee really had to have a year, and again, long season, he can recover the season, but I'm worried about that guy.
Yeah.
Because I think this is like his last shot. From here, I'll put it this way. He may get another Moto 3 ride, but it's not going to be on a top team.
No.
He might even step into Moto 2, not going to be a top team. And we know where that gets you in this league. So
I think he'd be better off to go to Superbikes or Super Sport.
Yeah. Get in there.
Honestly.
Early. Yeah. I mean, because the path isn't looking great for him right now.
Yep. But
we shall see. Man. In the very beginning, because of all of the issues of people sitting around the track in qualifying, a lot of folks had long lap penalties. And Jim, I wanted to ask you a question about this.
Okay.
Is the long lap penalty in the beginning of the race a sufficient penalty for qualifying infractions? And the reason I ask you is because it seems like these guys can take the long lap, especially depending on the track, quite quickly. And they may lose out on 3 or 4 places, but they're still only a second away from a leader. Is that a deterrent enough for someone to not park it out there and qualifying and wait to get a tow, because they can qualify now in the front row, take a long lap, and be sitting in 7th, and if they'd had a bad qualifying, they would have started in 14th?
No, it's not. That's the short answer to this question. I think that it was a good idea until some guy named Johann Zarco flew through the long lap and showed everybody, this is how you're going to have to do it, like he did at Brno. Was it 2 years ago? That is how everybody is attacking it. And you see a lot of Moto3 guys going through in practice and on their first lap or two of qualifying. They go through that long lap and they go through it hard, so they know that they can go fast through it. I am still going to stand on my soapbox and say, if you're going to pull this crap in qualifying, looking for a tow, and you're going to ride irresponsibly, then you're going to be sitting on the last row of the grid with your motorcycle going in the opposite direction when the light goes green. That's going to stop you from doing it, because it's just that in itself is just that embarrassment, that peer pressure of you being backwards on that grid is going to stop that stuff in its tracks. That is where it's going. Remind me to email Freddie about that.
I have possibly a more timely, realistic solution to this, is that
please,
we add a chicane to that long lap corner. And by that, I don't mean you have to add tarmac. You just set some cones out there. You got to go around the cones. That's going to slow you down. You're not going to be dragging your knee on the long lap corner when you're doing that. You're going to have to go through the cones and make it so it's like a freaking license test, right? In and out, in and out. Now you can go. That's going to take some time off of you.
I like that idea, but how about this one? If you don't like that one, what about a ride through in the pits?
I mean, it's worked before.
It's been done before.
Yeah. I mean, that really does hamper you quite a bit.
Now, you go down that path, yeah.
Now it gets to the – the only way that fines and penalties work, they have to be such a steep deterrent that you won't do it, right? So, yeah, you're going to lose 30 seconds, and that's a big chunk in a race. Your race is essentially ruined. Well, there's a way to avoid that. Like, you don't drop pace. And I still think they can monitor this quite easily with all the onboard techs. Like, dude, it's just got to be 85%. You go out there, you do lower than that, boom, you're brought in. That's it. Your qualifying is over. Now you're just going to be wherever you are in the back. That too. Anyway, back to the race. It was great, because in the beginning it was elbows out. Everyone was pushing everybody around. In fact, it's almost like we always say in Moto3, it's essentially impossible to take notes on who's doing what. You just kind of got to talk about the race as it goes, because if I was to sit here and told you who was in what position at what lap, we would never get done talking about this race. So, again, you need to be watching this if you are not, because this is where the most hectic action is of the season. Denis Anjou, he was the man on the move in the very beginning. He was making his way and sliding through the field, and we had only gotten to lap five, and chaos was just already going, to throw one of Jim's favorite words in there. Gabriel Rodrigo, he hit the front of the lead, and then he hit the deck. Right at lap five, he went down and had a nasty high side. Again, everybody did a great job in missing him and his bike as well. And then Denis Anjou, he hits the lead and gets out there. Of course, this was going to be short-lived because his teammate there, Acosta, who had been charging through the field from 13th, and you kind of almost forgot, like, oh yeah, he was back there. He's been in the group. He makes his way up to second, and then on lap eight, he hits the front. But Bender was there, and he wasn't going to be shown up by this, so then he took his turn at the front. I mean, it was whoever was up there, they were going to have their shot at the front at some point, but you weren't going to stay there very long. And I even put in my notes, it's going off right now. Suzuki, the man who had a great qualifying and finally looked like he was going to have a weekend to write home about, ended up crashing on lap 13, which continued his horrible streak. I think the announcing team mentioned he has now not finished the six of his last nine races dating back to last year. Not what you need to be doing there, my man. Not at all. At the front of the PIAC, you will notice that there was just a gang of KTMs. It's really hard to tell the difference between the Tech 3 boys and the IO boys these days. So it's like, I don't know.
There's one way to do it. I figured it out. I had to watch it several times. The factory KTMs of Pedro and who's his teammate? I can't think of it off the top of my head right now.
Masia.
Yeah, Masia, that's it. They have green on the bottom of the fairings for the Motorex oil from Switzerland. The KTMs of Tech 3 do not have any green on them. That is the only way to tell them apart.
There you go,
guys.
Alrighty. Now, the KTM boys, you think, okay, we're all together, we're going to be up front, and we're just going to try to work with one another and pull a gap. No, that wasn't going to happen. No, we all. I'm going to take the lead. It was nobody knew what to do. It was just going off at the front. Everybody was knocking each other around. And then while they were doing that, Romano Fanati was like, "Well, I'll let you guys push each other wide in the corner. I'll sneak by and take the lead." So now we're at seven to go. And then we're kind of like things, you know, as far as Moto 3, they settled down just for a second. It's kind of like the field took their breath. And then when we got with five to go, it's too hard to take notes. Even says it right here. Too hard to take notes. So much action. Wow.
The bar fight has become a knife fight, yes. And somebody is just getting ready to pull the gun at this point.
It's a knife fight in the dark. They're just swinging. Who knows what's going where? You just don't know what's going to happen. The breaking duels every corner. Someone's coming in. Anju's got it in one. Acosta's got it in another. Masia comes around. Bender's in there. I mean, it's just insane at the end of this race. And then, of course, throw more. Beat the dead horse. Foggia crashed out of the back somewhere. I don't know where he was, but another dismal race for them, my man there. Acosta then almost high-sided. Now, they kept him honest in this race, that's for sure. He didn't go out there and dominate. He had to work for it. And at this point, it put a gap between the front two of Masia and Anjou. So you're like, oh, maybe those guys will get to it. And then we get to the last lap, and it's like, okay, nope, the field tightened up. Seven guys could win this race. We don't know. And they're just ever so close. Every corner, they're all getting closer and closer. They're not really able to pass each other so much on the brakes because they're all on the very edge, and they all know it's going to come down to dry sack corner. One of the hardest corners to get right on the last lap and not get taken out. And, well, they go in there, 3-4 breaths. Anjou, unfortunately, had the most kamikaze move of them all, tucks the front, ends up taking out Masia, and ends up also taking out Bender. Everybody else kind of skittles around, but when they come around the corner and finally get to the line, there he is, the man of the hour, Pedro Acosta, with another win. He has officially stamped his MotoGP passport. I am here to stay. Here's my visa. Get used.
Yes. I mean, when we got down to four laps ago, I have the words written, total bar room brawl. That's one. Anjou looked amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you actually, I had to watch this race again just because it's that good. If watching Anjou from a second time, you realize he is on the absolute edge of control. he is so close to being off the bike, thrown over the bars, and having the front end gone. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So you almost, even though you watch it a second time, you know that this is what's going to happen at the end. You're like, well, yeah, it kind of makes sense now given the kamikaze way he'd been riding the whole time, right? So that was one thing. Yes, Onchu screwed up. He screwed up bad. I mean, like, really bad. Like, I think he's going to be having some sort of, like, grid penalty slash long lap penalty slash start from the pit lane penalty of some kind in Le Mans.
He will.
Because there's no way they're going to let this one go, right? That was just, like, true kamikaze style, man. Let's throw the headband on and we're going through here. But what you need to look at, what you need to pay attention to, is you need to pay attention to what Acosta does at the end of Drysack corner, right? That kid is on the inside and he has such amazing feel on the brakes with that bike that he slows it down, has it at the apex where everybody else has gone wide, and then guns it out carrying some kind of weird laws of physics bending acceleration slash tire grip as he's going around this corner that he suddenly propels himself to the front. My friends, that is not a skill that most 16-year-olds have racing in Moto 3. This kid is a talent. That move is what is akin to like Mark Marquez winning races at when he first stepped into Moto GP, right? When he won it, he won three races in at Texas, right? I mean, it's what it's like. This kid has racecraft well beyond his years. Like, I don't know where he gets the racecraft from, but he has some amazing racecraft. And not only just amazing racecraft, like he keeps his cool like in every situation that's there. But they said about number one is his setup, right? Okay, that if you watched qualifying, you know how bad that motorcycle was. That motorcycle sucked. It was horrible. Yet he calmly sat down with his crew, they talked about it, and they put something on that bike for him to be able to go to the front with, and he took advantage of it. He was in the front by after three laps. He was in that front group, which is something else to be remarked about. I have not enough superlatives for this kid. I hope that he, has great success, because I want to watch this kid for the rest of this year. I want to watch him in Moto 2. I want to watch him in Moto GP because I think he's amazing. I think this kid could be the one who breaks all the records. Like Nieto's record of the 13 world championships is probably, it's very possible that this kid could go after that, barring injuries and everything else that can potentially crop up and derail whatever you're trying to do. He's that good, and he's 16. I mean, it's just amazing. And props to his parents, because his parents is like, I think his dad is just a fisherman. I mean, they didn't have very much. And he is as down to earth, level headed and grounded as an individual. He almost reminds me of Nicky Hayden in the way that he is grounded, that he's not too big for him, his own self. And to be that mature at 16 is remarkable. To race a motorcycle at that level at 16, absolutely astonishing. To win three races on the trot and your worst finish is second, absolutely Mark Marquez-esque, right? If you're not watching Moto 3, you need to be watching Moto 3, because I'm telling you, it is worth the price of admission just to watch this kid. He is amazing. And with that, I have said all I can say about the kid.
And speaking of his one second place, we didn't even mention second place. That's how far we made it past this way. But that's Fanati, second place on the podium. It's been a while. We've seen Fanati up there, kind of a return to form there. And he was smart enough to stay out of the final corner melee there and sneak it on through. Jeremy Alcoba there, rounding out your podium in third, ahead of Minho, Sasaki, Tate, and the rest of the field. Now, we get to the championship standings. Well, hell, Jim, this is over. I mean, Pedro Acosta is on 95 points, and Antonelli, wait a minute, how? I don't know, but he's in second place, but on 44 points.
Yep.
We're talking this. Our boy Acosta's got a 2-race weekend lead already. We are on the fourth race of the season.
Mm-hmm.
out now, of granted, a maximum Luck, 100
Luck has
points.
Been with him, right?
Huh?
Luck has been with him because Bender's crashed and had a terrible weekend because of a penalty, right? At Portimao. You had McPhee, who's not scored a point in four races. So there's a little bit of Luck that kind of goes along with this. But, dude, Luck is when preparation meets opportunity. And that kid has an opportunity, and he is taking it and grabbing it with both hands. And I cannot blame him for it. He is amazing. But, yeah, this is not over by a long shot. But who's going to step up here? And whoever it is, they're going to have to step up quick.
And they have to go on a streak. They've got to yeah. – now to catch him, you got to beat him again. And you have to hope that he maybe has a bad weekend or two. Because yep. even if you nibble some points here and there, he's going to come back and get some wins too, and he's going to erase that. I mean,
easily.
Everyone on this list has to overcome at least 50 points. I mean,
that's tough.
Oh, that's a lot in of. This yeah, yeah, in this class, yeah. I mean, he can have two bad weekends where he goes down. I mean, it's very possible, but.
Oh, yeah.
That's just
remember when Jorge Martin was going for the championship with Bezzecchi.
Mm-hmm.
Remember how they kept trading falls there for a little bit?
Yeah. Man, so that was possible. A good championship, man. And as you mentioned, that was a fun one to watch.
That's a good one. Yeah. This one's going to be fun just for a completely different reason, too.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Because this kid could walk it.
He's one and done. Now, here's a question. Since we'll go on we're on Tangent Tuesday here, even though it's Monday. if he keeps showing out this year and just has maybe a couple dominant wins in there as well, right? And yeah. really starts doing some amazing things, does he do a Miller and make the jump? Would a team take a flyer on another again? Or are they gonna do the Mir? They're gonna put him up Moto 2, put him in there for a year, see how it goes.
I think you got to put him in Moto 2 for a year.
Yeah, I mean he's pretty young.
I really think you do, mainly because I don't think at 16, well, would be what 17 if he went to MotoGP. I don't think he would have the physical strength because his body's not physically developed yet to have enough muscle to control a 280 or 300 horsepower MotoGP bike.
How old was Jack when he went? Was he 19?
I thought Jack was closer to 20.
20, maybe. I know he wasn't this young. He wasn't this young. No. But even then, I think that's always another question, right? Would Jack be better if he had done Moto 2 and not maybe jumped? Yeah.
Well, Miller was also really big, too.
Yeah, he's like not,
well, he really didn't fit a Moto 3 bike to begin with.
Yes, this is true.
So, you know, Pedro's much smaller in stature, but he's 16, and you know, biologically, boys tend to grow at that 17, 18, and then they're finished off by like 19. So he's could be getting ready for a growth spurt, and who knows, he could shoot up and be another 2 or 3 inches taller, and well, then he's not really going to fit a Moto 3 bike, and you know, then he probably fits a Moto 2 bike better. But I also think that when Miller made his jump, you were running Moto 2 bikes that were 600 Hondas, and I think my feel, looking at how guys ride Moto 2 bikes now with the Triumph, that motor, three cylinder configuration, torquey motor kind of thing, is a much closer preparation tool for what you get on a MotoGP bike.
When did Miller make the jump? Was that not 16?
That had to be. It had to be 13 or something. Because didn't he jump when Marquez jumped?
Were they running the 800s, or were they running thousands?
No,
then?
They were not running. They were running. They were running thousands because Marquez had gone through 2 years of Moto 2. And Miller, because it was like one, it was like 2008, 2001. No, when was the last Indy race? 2014, maybe 2015, maybe as late as 2015. But I remember being there, and Miller was going. There was a lot of talk about Miller jumping over, and that had to have been 2013, 2014, somewhere around there.
Let's see. We've got internet. I'm sure we can figure this out.
Yeah, we always do this, don't we?
Yeah.
Let's just see how good Jim's memory is.
So 2015, Miller graduated to MotoGP. Yep, there we go.
That was close.
All right, so he's been doing it for 6 years. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. I think Pedro, even as good as he is, he could stay in Moto 2 another year and be fine. Or in Moto 3 another year and be fine. Honestly. So
I mean I he could, but I don't see why he needs to. Moto 3.
No.
Moto 2, certainly get there and get the experience, get the bigger bikes, because you're always on a clock with this sport, right? You're never just like, oh, I've got time. You don't.
No.
I mean, shit, man, you're 20 years old. If you're not almost to MotoGP, you got to start looking at other avenues. That's insane, by the way, right? Mm-hmm. But then again, these guys who get to that level, by the time they're 20, they have put in a 15-year career. So,
yeah, that's true. If not longer.
Yeah. It's not as weird as if, like, you know, because the rest of us normal people, you know, we don't start our careers until in our 20s, right? And some later.
Speak for yourself.
Some later. So you do 15 years and you're on the other, you know, closing on 40 or whatever, and you're like, oh, okay. And then you look, these guys are doing 20. Oh, it's ridiculous that their career is like that same thing. They just start so much earlier. And by the time they're 40, they're on their second career of being team boss or punter or something, whatever, right? Throw my Britishism in there. Moto 3. The championship may not be the best this year to watch, but the races will be.
And oh, yeah.
That's where, if you only had to watch one race, of course it's going to be MotoGP, because why not? But, I mean, really, you should make some time for Moto 3. At least maybe catch it on another day on a rerun or something.
Yep. Agreed.
Ooh, I mean, so, you know, that hour show turned to hour and a half, so that's pretty typical of what you're doing, you know. We do have another race. Is Le Mans is this weekend, right?
Yep. Definitely got the Le Mans. I think we got to pay attention to what Honda does with their bikes in MotoGP. We'll pay attention to Pedro in Moto 3. And then this Remy Lowe's battle that's going to shape up here as well. Didn't Roberts go well at Le Mans like last year too?
I do believe so. When it was like mixed conditions, right? And he was out there running around pretty good.
Which there's every possibility of that happening. So
very much so.
Yeah.
And so it's all good. Quattro can get pumped back up for this weekend. See what I did there?
That's all what you did there. Hit and hurt.
See if he get around, and then lots of things to go. And remember, folks, we talked about a lot here. So if you want to get in on the discussion, remember you can always email us at motopod@motopodcast.com. If you want to hit us up on Facebook, we do have a presence there as well. It's facebook.com/motopod. We are on Twitter @moto_pod. You can follow us there as well. I am on Twitter and Instagram @SkylarV28. Jim, where can people find you?
Instagram and Twitter @MotoRGV.
All right, perfect. Well, that was a fun show. And, side note, I watched a little Moto E. It's fun. It's not there as far as exciting yet, but it's getting better.
It's going to get better. That's the important. That's the thing. You're going to have to. It's the future, and we're going to have to get used to it. It's better. The biggest thing is the weight of the batteries. That's what's killing everything. Is just the weight of the batteries. So, yeah, if you can get the weight down, it's going
to
be better.
It's the both. Like, it's the weight down, but be able to also output more and last longer. The first person that figures out all of that will be a very rich man or woman.
Yeah.
Or
person.
I don't know. Them's, theirs, whatever. I don't care. Will be a very rich human being. Let's put it that way.
Yep. Yeah.
All right.
It's going to be interesting.
We're getting in the weeds. I guess we should get the hell out of here.
Let's do it. Close it off.
All right, folks. We'll catch you next time. Zip, zoom.